have a few more tidbits from things said by Mother, not been published so far. One, told to a worker, it is only the Mahasaraswati aspect that can remain with you. It is she who looks after each detail. Sri Aurobindo has said that she does not forgive unless you try to change yourself. India is not the earth, rivers and mountains of this land, neither is it a collective name for the inhabitants of this country. India is a living being, as much living as, say, Shiva. All the countries have their own spirit, and if politically you make any changes, they would be unreal. For example, although Austria has become part of Germany, still they are quite separate, and the spirit of Austria is in agony. India is like a goddess, like Shiva. If she likes, she can manifest in human form. About color prejudice, from the aesthetic point of view, I can say that the brown color is better than the white, but it is quite absurd and foolish to think that anybody is better or worse simply because of his color. The African Negro thinks that his color is the most beautiful of all. The Japanese think that people of their color are superior to any color. Color prejudice is a very low thing. It indicates a very low state of consciousness, a consciousness just emerging from the inconscient. It is not an idea. It is not a feeling. It is something still lower than that. When you think in terms of color prejudice, your own psychic laughs at your foolishness. It knows that it has lived in white, brown, yellow, red, black, and all sorts of bodies. When you get this sort of feeling, you bring it before your consciousness and it will disappear. Fear is hidden consent. When you are afraid of something, it means that you admit its possibility and thus strengthen its hands. It can be said that it is a subconscious consent. Fear can be overcome in many ways. There is the way of courage, faith, knowledge, are some of them. These are some which are relevant to us. Coming back to our theme, today we consider the instruments of the spirit. Considering from the point of view of purification, we recognize that our soul, our self can function through certain God-given instruments. They are the mind, the emotions, the life force, the body. And these, in the nature of things, involved as they are in the movement of progressive evolution starting from the inconscient, they are seeds of impurity which vitiate our living and act as barriers in our attempt to change ourselves. All disciplines propose number of measures for purifying these instruments. In the Indian tradition particularly, they speak of eliminating number of activities, movements, which bring in any kind of impurity. And they propose number of inhibitions through religious taboos, ethical and moral rules, and so on. They go on eliminating as far as possible areas of activity where these movements are supposed to be inevitable, and ultimately they confine themselves only to those movements which they think have relevance to divine life or godly life. Going a little further, when they have sufficiently narrowed down their range of movements, they seek to merge in Brahman, in the pure consciousness, and stick to that poise, leaving the body to run its course. So net result is, persons leave the field of life to its own imperfections, leaving it as incapable of purity, and withdraw into themselves so that they can share the purity, the innate purity of the soul. This is clearly not the solution for a seeker who aims at a divine manifestation in life, at a whole-sided perfection of himself. He is not satisfied with any kind of spiritual quietism to promote purity. He aims also at a certain divine kinetism. He would like to express something of what he has gained within himself in terms of purity, in terms of harmony, in terms of love, and so on, in his action, in his daily life. He would combine both quietism and kinetism at appropriate junctures. He would make them complementaries instead of opposites and aim at a kind of total purity. His object in striving for a total purity is not to observe the laws of ethical perfection. A seeker, a spiritual seeker, the normal kinds of temptations with which ethical laws and rules deal, the spiritual seeker is not attracted by them normally. He does not need the manual of ethics to behave himself, provided he is sincere. He knows what promotes Godward growth and what stands against it, whatever religions or ethics or canons of morality may say. His standards are different. Anything that leads away from the unity of the soul, from the closeness of one's being with the divine, anything that could interfere with the working of a divine guidance, he shuns. The question may be asked, what is the necessity of perfection at all? Indeed, there would be no necessity for measures of perfection if we were sufficiently pure in our instrumental being. But as things are not that way. There are two kinds of impurity which stick to us right from the beginning. One is the fact that evolution, of which we are products, starts from a base in the inconscient, in nations, unconsciousness. And that shadow goes on vitiating our upward attempts, pulls you constantly down, throws shadows over your being, however high you may reach on your mental peaks. This is an incapacity due to the origin of our evolution in the inconscient. The second is due to the process of our evolution. We have seen that in evolution, one principle after another goes on establishing itself, drawing upon the previous principle already established. And as the edifice comes up from the physical to the life, from the life to the mind, from the mind to the spiritual, we see there is an interconnection, an interdependence between these different formations of the evolutionary spirit. The lower lower form or the lower consciousness acts as a drag on what has been evolved and takes its place higher in the ladder, with the result that there is a constant immixture of movements. Whatever the life force may want to do, there is constantly the dragging weight of the physical body, the limiting walls of the material sheath. Similarly, however clearly the mind may like to think, discriminate, reason out, there is always the mixture, known and unknown, of one's own desires, likes and dislikes, formed habits from the past. Thus, none of our instruments functions at its optimum or at its characteristic quality, with its characteristic quality unimpaired. There is, in the functioning of every instrument, there is an influence and a mixture from other instrumental parts. Thus comes in the necessity of elimination of impurities and cultivation of purification. To take an instance, they say, and all say who have experienced, that the basis of life is delight. The aim of life is also delight. If that is so, every contact, every impact in life should give rise to reactions of delight, of ananda. Instead of that, we have got varying reactions. At times, reactions of pleasure indeed. At times, reactions of suffering, pain, shock, shrinking. Why? That is because we have our own desires which make us inclined in particular directions, seek experiences of a particular kind, and avoid the other experiences. This impulsion by desire from below or from within, it vitiates our contacts and receptions from outside. And what should be a constant reaction of delight to the contacts of life is turned into an unpredictable reaction. If by some measure of purification we can isolate, we can precise and eliminate this element of desire, there would be nothing to interfere with every movement of life evoking from us a reaction of ananda. As our instrumental being stands today, we have the physical body, which has its own roots in the inconscient, tamas, obscurity. It is enlivened by a life force which imparts its character to the body and in the process takes on something of the grossness of the material body which it activates. There is that realm or region of emotions, what we may call the heart. And above that is, in distinction to the gross physical body, we have the inner instrument, the antakkarana, as they call, consisting of buddhi, the intellect, with will, ego, reason, the sense mind, and the heart. Now all these four are based upon a stuff of consciousness. Right from the heart, the sense mind, the intellect, and the ego, base themselves on a stuff of consciousness which we call chitta, basic stuff of consciousness. From the activities of this chitta, or the activities thrown up by unpurified chitta, the basic stuff of consciousness, arises what we call the desire soul, the desire being, which is quite different. And in fact, It covers up our true soul, our true being, the psychic being. It is this desire soul that mixes with every movement of ours and spoils things. Now, this chitta is largely subconscious. Only part of it we know through the ideas, thoughts, emotions that come up. But the bulk of it is below the surface. It goes on forming itself. It is not a ready-made stuff. Each thought that we think, each emotion that we feel, they send down a current and they are absorbed and kept in the bank of chitta. And all these impressions remain in our subconscious chitta. They come up at the most inconvenient moments. They come up in dreams. They come up when we are trying to build up something opposite, as if to remind us that they are there, stored in our own subconscious, and they need to be eliminated or cast out before the opposite elements are formed. The contents of this subconscious basic stuff are passive and active. Passive when they are simply being received. Active when things come up as a reaction or in response or to a call from the mind for something from the memory to come up. This is the passive and the active content of chitta. Both together form what is called memory. And it is this memory of what all we have been doing in the past, memory of things going on in our environments, a deep memory of what we have done in the past, earlier births, all these together incline our nature in a particular direction. This is what is called forming habits. Our habits are not eternal things. Our habits are products of movements stored in our chitta. Our habits are, in other words, our habits are formed by ourselves. That is why what is formed can be unformed, can be dissolved. This gives a lie direct to the saying that nature cannot change. After all, what is nature? The strength of nature is in its ability to hold to a thing rigidly. Repeat things, and this comes by the force or by the strength of this memory, this chitta. Similarly, our emotions also rise from the movement of this chitta, chitta vritti, as Patanjali says. The movements of this basic stuff of consciousness, they throw up our emotions. And as I said, the desire soul is a product of all these movements. Desire soul, which conceals and covers up the psychic being. We spoke of life force, prana, activating the body, supporting the mind in its movements. But this life force again is not pure. It is always influenced by our desire mind. The desire mind gives it an orientation. This is what Sri Aurobindo calls here the nervous action of psychic prana. Not life force pure, not physical pure, not even mind pure. But there is a movement in all of us which is more or less a nervous action of the life force under the influence of desire. This is a major culprit in our deviations. Sri Aurobindo illustrates how a pure emotion which borrows direct from the soul, like love, wanting to give oneself, wanting to arrive at a certain union of consciousness with another, is quickly turned by this psychic prana, psychic not in that sense, but let us call it desire prana, desire life force. It is mixed up with the desire of the body, what is called lust. And even one may start, even if one starts on the pure level of love in its purity, very soon this kind of pull from desire through nervous action links up the higher emotion with the physical desire called lust, and love is debased into lust. This, Sri Aurobindo points out, happens almost in all cases of higher feelings, higher emotions. They are deformed, and that is inevitable as long as desire and its sustainer, ego, they are active in the body, in the system. Even in the mind, the action of this immixture is marked, especially in the action of the sense mind. 100 things may be there in our front, but our senses, our sense mind through the senses, always rushes to things where its desire draws it, where it is impelled by this desire life force. And ultimately, all these are traced to the activity of chitta, not yet purified, but completely dominated by desire and ego. This is so as long as we confine our mental action to the surface mind, which is dominated by the desire mind. This external sense mind is a slave, but there is an inner sense mind, a subtle sense mind corresponding to each of our physical senses. There is a subtler sense, an eye behind the physical eye, an ear behind the physical hearing, and so on. Now when these inner senses, the inner sense mind becomes active, the physical or the corporeal organs are no more necessary. Things go straight. There is a direct contact and this results in phenomena called clairvoyance. We begin to see things which are even beyond the physical range of sight. Clairaudience, we begin to hear things from afar. We enter into the minds of others telepathy. We put our will over others hypnotism. All these things start taking place when something of the inner mind, the subtler mind, awakes and moves into action.